The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
And joining me on the podcast right now on this horrible Friday in the markets, it's John May, money analyst and part of SP Angel. Any bright news, John, there? I did post out some on Twitter saying, listen, the markets are selling off badly. A bit of a wobble. We may be retesting the lows in October. But UK GDP, it was up month on month in January, 0.3%. Forecast, only 0.1%. So three times better than forecast. And the previous month was minus half of 1%. So at least there's a bit of positive there somewhere. But it's a miserable market, John. Like I said, in the junior market, we had a company called Wand Disco. The ticker is Wand. They've used that magical wand to disappear a lot of revenue by the looks of it. So not magical for shareholders, though. You know, it's really annoying that. How can that happen? And also, we've had SVB, which is Silicon Valley Bank, also having to sell lots of stuff to get some cash from the balance sheet. And that's a tech sort of startup company, funder. So that's going to, injure those all the new businesses that could, one or two of them could grow into excellent businesses and they're not going to get funding now. So it's quite miserable, isn't it? All round, John. I mean, normally we look at China as a growth engine in these times. What's happening? Anything positive happening?
Well, the weather's been miserable. It's been a shocking week.
After John, positive, not negative. With a miserable market and all that, I'd forgotten about the weather, but now you brought that back in, and the weather's awful.
Yes, no, exactly. But I think that does have an impact on financial markets. Mm. The Chinese pretty positive about their target outlook of 5%, but that's the one Chinese number I really never believe. And if you talk to the guys at Capital Economics, they'll usually take a sort of 5 to 6 GDP growth number, and after they've done their economic assessment, it's normally about 3 or 3.5. So
believe you believe any Chinese figures. Because, I mean, I believe the government, that they're excellent at their figures. They know their figures. But what they tell us is completely different. The Chinese tell you what you want to hear, what you think you should hear, or what they want you to hear. But I said the only way of guiding it, I think we said this last week, the only way of guiding it is actually seeing what they do, as in how much commodities are they using, what's the commodity prices, how much electricity they're burning, that kind of thing. It's what they say and what they do, two different things, isn't it,
Yes, when it comes to a political level, but I think when it comes to a lot of the underlying statistics, as in movement of metals in and out and what they're doing at a more granular level, I think because it's a command economy, we believe the statistics are actually more accurate than many other places in the world. And so I think that's useful to work on. So yes, they create this fantastic target and everybody's supposed to work really hard to get to 5%. Maybe we should create these targets as well. But we're not very good at putting people in gulag camps if they miss their targets. That's the only thing. But they've also got a 3% inflation target. And I'm thinking, how do you achieve a 5%? If you're really going to achieve 5% GDP, how do you do that whilst keeping inflation at 3%? Because you're going to suck in so much in terms of commodities. There's going to be so much commodity demand to achieve that 5% GDP. Prices are going to go up. And I think what we're seeing now, the little bits of news coming out that they're saying they've been selling copper into international markets. They're going to dump a load more copper into the LME warehouses. I think they are working at pushing commodity prices down. For example, they're cracking down on the hoarding of iron ore, because iron ore prices are up 50% since December, up at $129 a ton. And if you consider it only costs you about $20 a ton in Australia these days, that's a big old margin for BHP and Rio Tinto. And their earnings are still way ahead of what anybody would normally expect these earnings to be. And that money trickles down through the mining sector in different ways, and clearly very good for investors in those companies.
Again, I understand the command economy and all that stuff, but I mean, what they say to us and what they actually know to be true, I think it's two different things. Let's be honest. I mean, whatever present she wants to say, I mean, for him, it's within his interests, his best interests, to say, yes, we're hitting targets. Because, of course, he wants to be seen as all-powerful, all-good, all achieving. But, I just don't think trust anything from, you know, anything released by the state of China, Russia, you don't trust.
Well, you're right to be wary on that. That's for sure, especially anything that they say politically. Mm. I mean, all politicians say odd things from time to time, but the Chinese, they create their own narrative and they control it really well. And they're much more believable than the Russians, for example.
Mm. Well, yeah. It's a scale of relative, I suppose. So let's have a look at some individual company news. Alphabetical order, Amur Minerals. What's happening there, John?
Oh, it's Amur. They finally worked out how to get the money in from the Russian buyer for their Russian asset. That's $35 million. So they've confirmed a 1.8 pence special dividend. Which investors will be very pleased to see. The divestiture price is 119% premium to their market cap when they agreed the deal. So they're very happy about that. AMA will remain listed as an AIM Rule 15 cash shell, which means, and to be honest, AIM cash shells are worth somewhere between £500,000 and £1 million these days. Yeah. And so they'll keep some cash in there. And They're busy looking at other assets that they might reverse or absorb into that shell. So watch this space, because they're a good team. They know how to they're certainly good, very good in the mining industry from an exploration point of view. And I think this is a market where they can acquire a decent asset.
Yeah. Have they received the money yet?
It is coming to them.
The buyer has transferred the total consideration for the disposal of to the company, and the receipt of funds is expected imminently. We will update shareholders
exactly.
soon as the consideration has been received. So that was on the 6th of March. We're now on the 10th. How long does it take to transfer these days? Just, you know.
Well, it's coming from Russia. Who knows in this environment? But I don't think they put this announcement out unless they were sure it was coming.
Yeah, 1.8 pence special dividend within 90 days of receipt of the consideration. Okay, and it did rise on that news about 59-60%. So let's hope they get that cash RNS out. That's what people want. It's coming from Russia. No, say no more. Okay, I'm not saying it's not coming at all. I'm just saying, you know, make sure. They get their cash in. Okay, so Amaro's good news. Well, nice bit of a jump in the share price, but I mean, it's not performed, is it, really well, the share price, for a while, but at least then it's got to a previous high. That's taking it back to a high of back in October. So, so next, Atlantic Lithium. I had Neil, I was chatting to Neil, the executive chairman, on the podcast yesterday about the short note that had been issued on Piedmont, which is, of course, their funding partner, or JV partner. And he basically said the headline was the short note from Blue Orchid Capital, this company that's specialising in sending out short-selling notes. He said it's irrelevant. It has no impact on what we're actually doing. The mining licence, all that stuff, is not connected to that land they're talking about, which is early exploration land they've hardly done much work on. So it's, you know, it scared investors. The share price went down by 40%. I don't think it's actually recovered either. So just checking it. Literally, the day before was 37 pence, the share price. It went down to 20 pence, closed at 22 pence, and now it's 26 pence. So that's a drop, you know, from 37 pence to 26 pence, because that selling note, which they say, of course, is irrelevant to what they're doing, the mine plan and all that stuff. So,
Yes, I mean, they're absolutely right. The mining plan has got nothing to do with the other licenses that Blue Orchid is talking about. That's not going to bother Atlantic. It's not going to bother Piedmont, the American refiner. The company is waiting for the license to be granted by the government of Ghana. We believe they're supportive. The Ghana Sovereign Wealth Fund that has said it is looking to put $20 and probably $30 million into Atlantic came out with a statement supporting the company and saying it was still interested in, indicating it was still interested in making the investment. The fund, it's called MIIF, the Minerals Income Investment Fund in Ghana, says this is false. Atlantic Lithium obtained all exploratory license in accordance with the laws of Ghana. In fact, when they obtained these two licenses that are being talked about by the Blue Orca Capital short sellers, those licenses were in fact signed off by the government of Ghana. So it was all done in the right and proper manner. It just so happens that there were two licenses which are not being worked on, where a payment was made to the son of someone who is involved with the Ghanaian government. And in fact, he's an opposition, that General Mosquito, he's an opposition leader. So I think one feels there's a bit of mischief making here, but they're actually, it's like a dog barking up the wrong tree. He's just at the wrong tree.
Well, exactly. Yeah. I mean, all the figures that have been put out, you know, from Atlantic Lithium, it doesn't concern that bit of land they're talking about. So, you know, what's the latest bit of the mineral resource, Awoya, and all that stuff? That's nothing to do with what that short seller's talking about. So,
no, exactly.
It's taking a massive hit. And, the DFS coming out is not affected in any way whatsoever. So, you know, in this market, though, it's easy to prey on, you know, the people who are under research and easily scared, because the market is a hard market, you know, and there's a lot of people who are risk averse. So, you know, any bit of negative news can knock a share price massively, can't it, you know?
Well, we're very closely involved with the lithium scene in Ghana at the moment, because we're also involved with a private company working next door to Atlantic Lithium, and their chief executive is in Ghana at the moment, having regular meetings with the Ministry of Mines, and so we have good inside intel on this, and we are aware that the government of Ghana do not want this to be a scandal. In fact, I don't think there is anything that really is particularly scandalous about this. It's not like the Profumo affair or anything like that. It's just that somebody related to a member of the Ghanaian government could have potentially been in position to make a lot of money, but it just so happens they're not working on his licenses, so unlucky. It's a shame. I mean, even if the mining license application was on those licenses, there still wouldn't be anything illegal about it. Now, on the other hand, we know the government of Ghana want to see value being added to lithium spodumene in Ghana. So there's more value to be added here, I think, going forwards. And Atlantic could be, you know, it should be the next big lithium play in town. I mean, the market cap is around £170 million. I mean, it's not a tiny company, but you know, this could go up a lot more from here.
Just looking there, the mineral resource estimate increased to 35.3 million tonnes at 1.25 Li2O. And looking at the figures in this, it's quite impressive there. It's sort of 125 million capital costs with a payback period of 5 months, less than 5 months. Cash operating costs of $278 per tonne. Average life of mine, EBITDA, of $248 million per annum. So it's quite compelling, isn't it? You know.
That's not even done at the current lithium price. So if you apply current lithium prices, you get absolutely ridiculous numbers coming out on the upside. But we don't expect lithium prices to stay up here for the next 10 years. We think they'll gradually pull back to something more normal. But we still think that the company's estimates are based on relatively, you know, quite conservative assumptions, and that's important.
One of your favourites, Cornish Metals, they've been on TV, haven't they?
Well, they've been on the BBC on something called the Spotlight programme in the week, so it's good to see our national broadcaster taking an interest, and they're getting ready to start production in 2026. I know that's a few years away. Before that, they've got to dewater the mine. Lots of drilling going on. They made a new discovery quite close by recently. After doing lots and lots of sort of geological detective work, they spotted a bit where somebody hadn't mined before, and they put a drill hole in it, and lo and behold, there was some more copper ore, which was fantastic. So, tin in this case. So I think, you know, the South Crofty tin mine, I'm sure, will reopen. Yes, there's a bit of a road to traverse before they get there. There'll have to be a major debt funding for building the plant and the mine, but I don't think that'll be particularly problematic for them. They've got strong backers in Sir Mick Davis, and his Blue Vision Fund, then various other institutions are in there. And once you've got a big group like that backing a company, the funding becomes so much easier going forwards. The banks will take notice. The big trading companies will come in. There'll be offtake agreements, royalties, all sorts of things. So it's very exciting times for them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We've got pasties, cream teas, and now tin.
Absolutely.
You have your tin cup and pasty, then it's gone. Nice.
And the mine is in quite a poor part of Cornwall. It's in the centre area. You know, everybody talks about how rich Cornwall is, but it's all that money's, you know, people's holiday homes around the coast. When you get into the middle of Cornwall, it's a bit of a sad place. And it was rich years ago because of the tin mining industry. Mm. And without tin, those guys don't have such a lot to do. So this will certainly regenerate an important part of the Cornish economy.
Yeah. Okay. Next up, Green Rock Mining. I spoke to Stefan Bernstein, Rhymes of Sunshine. He received an award at Canada at, is it PDAC, what is it, I think it was? Some kind of award there for their work in Greenland. What's happening at Green Rock?
Well, they've signed an MOU with a Norwegian construction and mining group. I don't need to go into the long name that they have, but these are big boys, and the company also raised £550,000 in the week at 3.5p, which wasn't so bad. So they are now pressing ahead. We think they've got a very good quality graphite project there. Greenland is a good place to work from our perspective. It's nice and easy, so long as you're not extracting uranium, the government are happy. It's right on the coast, so it's import-export is easy from a logistical perspective. And they have a good quality resource that they will carry on extending. They've got 23 million tons of graphite grading just over 20%. And you can turn that into battery anodes, and you can add value to those anodes using various processes for putting a bit more graphene into the graphite. And it's European, being in Greenland. So that's what all the new gigafactories in Europe are looking for. So I think Green Rock is very well placed. And it's a good little company in a strategic location.
Yeah. How tough is it at the moment? What's the appetite for raising money? I mean, you know, because I've just read a note from Senkos saying that literally it's been the hardest since 2022 final results. But the hardest since 2003, which is 20 years ago, and new raises or IPOs or whatever, it's been the worst since launch in 1995. So what's the appetite like? I mean, I suppose it depends on a project-by-project basis, does it? But, I mean, is it still tough, or is it getting a bit easier than last year or what?
It's much easier than last year, and we're still raising money for smaller companies on a regular basis. But I'm not going to pretend it's easy. I mean, this is not the simplest thing, but there are investors out there who are happy to take the risk, happy to buy what they see as cheap prices in the market, happy to support these companies as they grow. And especially if you're in the battery materials area, there is definitely interest in that, in copper, in tin, in graphite. All the components that are required for these gigafactories are very much in demand. And if you're in Europe, that's just all the better. So, yeah, it would be nice if it was a bit easier and if there was a bit more money floating around. But life's not like that. So, we're still funding exploration companies that have, shall we say, good prospects going forwards. It's not so easy doing the pure explorers who are just working on moose pasture. You've really got to have something that shows you've got a deposit. Or a good chance for deposit discovery where you are. So, you know, for example, you need some drill holes defining something, and then what you're raising the money for usually is to extend the deposit or to prove that it really does have some value.
Yeah. So it's still sort of difficult issue. Talk about being difficult. Rambler, what's happening there? It's still rambling on, but it's not been a nice time for shareholders.
Well, Rambler needed some cash because their suppliers had stopped you weren't giving them any credit anymore. So they needed, they're having to pay up front for a lot of their supplies. So they got what's called a dip loan in Canada, which comes from the, was effectively supported by the Canadian government. But you have to go through, you have to effectively go through a court process for all that. They had something called a comeback hearing in Canada. So the whole idea is that the government effectively helps to support the company, and then it works out how to get the company back on, back up on its feet again. They put out some accounts with that, and in fact, there's a statement that I still have to read. There's the Bradbury affidavit, which apparently has a lot of information in it. But the revenues last year almost doubled. They went to $54 million from 28 the year before. They produced an operating profit. It was just $1 million, so I need to see the details of that. But that's much better than a loss the year before of $7 million. Mm. The operating costs, yes, they went up, but I think a lot of that is down to the fact that they're having to pay the suppliers much earlier. I think the cost of not being able to get the money in from the supplier, or not getting the credit from the suppliers, is probably around $20 million. So as soon as this company gets back on its feet again, there's $20 million that of benefit that it should get from that. So they're going through a court process. That is all about managing the debt holders at this stage and banging heads together. And hopefully when that's been done, I think there's a reasonable chance that this will be re-quoted. And then hopefully there'll be value for shareholders at the end of the day.
Yeah, hopefully. Well, hopefully value for all shareholders in these markets at the end of the day, because it's been a miserable old time, and you get days like this where you think, oh, my word. Because we started to have a rally from the bottoms, didn't we? And then all of a sudden now it's been almost wiped out, by the looks of it. But there we are. That's the market view. That's investing. Do you have much cash on the sidelines, John, with deploy? Because of course, once you deploy your cash, then the markets will go up.
I must admit, I'm sitting on a bit of cash at the moment, I'm waiting for new issues to come along that we can buy. I think there's going to be some wonderful opportunities in this market environment.
Yeah, that's it. Stop there. We ended on a positive. That's good. That's good, John. That's it. Just see it like that. There are some wonderful opportunities coming up. And that's where. And there are longer term, of course. That's the way to look at it. It's just when you're in the middle of it all, downturning market, it's in the midst of 18 months of a downturning market. It's just hard going, isn't it? But look to the future. The future is bright.
Definitely. You've got China growing. The US, I know US interest rates are still going up, but things are growing. I think you've got to follow a bit of what Warren Buffett has said in the past. When markets look vulnerable, to quote Warren Buffett, only when the tide goes out do you discover who's been swimming naked. Yeah. So, let's hope that there aren't too many naked swimmers out there.
Well, it depends how attractive they are. but normally, the naked swimmers are the least attractive. You find, if you go on a naturist beach, they are the very people who should keep their clothes on. But, typical. There we are. Marvellous, John. Thanks for that. Speak to you next week.
Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.